Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm your host, Belinda Walia, and today's conversation centres on self-awareness, neurodivergence, and the importance of understanding how our minds work rather than constantly fighting against them. For many young people and adults living with ADHD and other forms of neurodivergence, life can often feel overwhelming, emotionally exhausting, or misunderstood. Difficulties with focus, impulsivity, emotional regulation, overthinking, and self-esteem can quietly affect relationships. It can affect education, work, and our daily lives. Yet beneath those challenges are often individuals with incredible creativity and sensitivity and insight, as well as potential. The issue is not always capability. Often it's a lack of understanding and it's a lack of support and self-awareness. So today's guest brings both professional insight and a personal understanding to this conversation. She is also someone very special to me personally, as we have worked together for nearly three decades. Vanessa Malik is an integrative counsellor who works closely with individuals navigating emotional challenges, personal growth and self-understanding. Through both professional and personal experience, Vanessa is passionate about helping young people and adults living with ADHD and neurodivergence become more self-aware, emotionally resilient, and better equipped to understand how their minds and behaviours impact their lives. Vanessa, it's such a pleasure to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to this conversation.
The pleasure's all ours. Now, Vanessa, let's start with your journey. What first led you into counselling and supporting emotional well-being?
Okay, so I'd say my journey actually started around about 10 years ago when I lost my mum quite suddenly, but really only took shape 3 years after that when, sadly, I also lost my husband to cancer. What really stands with me is how at the time, doctors, friends, nurses, everyone I met would keep describing me as stoic. And I felt, okay, they all see that I'm well controlled. But what I realized was that all I was really doing was bottling my emotions up rather than actually controlling them and managing them. And what this eventually led to was really severe panic attacks, to the point that I actually thought I was dying. And I remember one occasion calling out the paramedics because I did actually think I was dying. And as they sat there, spoke to me and sort of tried to get down to why I was feeling the way I was feeling, one of them suggested that I have counselling, which I didn't believe I had an issue at the time. I honestly thought this is not what I need. But when I then lost my husband, I started looking more into counselling and how it supports people. And I think that was the real transformative change for me in terms of developing my own self-awareness, because it finally led me to understand who I really and truly am and why I do what I do. The line that really sticks with me is when my counsellor said to me, because I'd always say, "So what do you think?" And she says, "Well, it's not about what I think, is it, Vanessa? It's about what you think that matters." And it was after this experience through my own counselling journey that I realised that I wanted to go and help other people discover who they truly are, develop their self-awareness. And that's why I eventually trained as a counsellor.
That's amazing. And thank you for sharing that so openly, Vanessa. And I think, and what you've been through, I'm, you know, truly sorry for the losses that you've had to experience. But I think what you've described there is something so many people quietly relate to, because from the outside, being described as strong or stoic can almost sound like a compliment, when internally someone may actually be suppressing that grief or emotions through fear and pain just to survive. And what's so important about your story is that it highlights how the body and mind will eventually communicate what we haven't allowed ourselves to process emotionally. So those panic attacks, I mean, completely understand that. I've sadly had to experience that myself, and most people do, but they don't understand what it is. But it can feel incredibly frightening and very real physically, and yet so often the nervous system is carrying unresolved emotional overwhelm. And I have worked together for many years, and I know this topic is something you feel deeply passionate about. So why is self-awareness such an important conversation for you personally, apart from what you've already stated about what do I actually think, what do I actually feel? Self-awareness really begins when we start turning inward.
For me, why it's so important is that once people start to understand their own emotions, their thoughts, their values, their strengths, their weaknesses, not only are they able to better regulate themselves, but they can also make more informed choices and develop better relationship with other people. I mean, on my personal journey, just going back to that, one of the things I discovered was that I was a people pleaser. And though I thought I was making the right choices, I actually wasn't. They weren't the best choices for myself. They were simply the best choices for other people. And I was thinking about how I would avoid conflict at the expense of my own well-being. And once I developed my self-awareness, I realized that self-love and self-care are just as important.
Absolutely. Of course, it's incredibly important, and looking within rather than always constantly focusing on what's external to ourselves, and over time constantly abandoning your own needs to keep others comfortable, can leave you emotionally exhausted and disconnected from who you truly are. So that self-awareness does allow you to pause and ask yourself, am I making the choice from love or from fear? And as you said, when people begin understanding their own emotions and their values and putting those boundaries in place, and she mentioned you were a people pleaser, you, of course, recognizing that those patterns more deeply, they often start building not only a healthier relationship with themselves, but healthier and more balanced connections with others as well. And a lot of people hear the term self-awareness. I mean, we've been hearing it so often now on social media, but may not fully understand what it means. And I know we've covered a little bit of what it means in terms of what I do professionally, what you do professionally, and the idea of understanding the concept of self. Why is self-awareness particularly important for individuals with ADHD or other forms of neurodivergence?
So people, in my experience, what I have found is that people living with ADHD and neurodivergence, they can find it really challenging to understand and manage their own emotions and their behaviors as well. And if they learn to develop self-awareness, they can learn how to better manage their reactions by better understanding what their triggers are. But also what it does, it helps them realize that they process things in a different way. So sometimes you find that with people with ADHD and neurodivergence, they can have labels attached to them. You know, they can be described as being lazy or naughty. And what they can start to do is they can start to challenge those labels within themselves and say, okay, I'm not naughty, I'm not lazy, my brain just thinks in a different way, and so I can approach this problem or this challenge in a different way.
Absolutely, and thank you once again for sharing your insight, because I think it's such an important topic to talk about. I think that reframing is incredibly powerful, because labels can shape the way people see themselves for years. And when someone repeatedly hears words like lazy, difficult, too much, they can start internalizing those beliefs and carrying shame around how their brain naturally functions. But with greater self-awareness and people being more aware themselves of ADHD and neurodivergence, people actually educating themselves and understanding a lot more about neurodivergent individuals can begin to realize they're not flaws at all. Their mind simply processes information, emotions, and as you said, stimulation differently. And once that shift happens, people often move from self-criticism into self-compassion, which can completely change their confidence, and it can change emotional well-being and the way they approach challenges in everyday life. And many neurodivergent individuals grow up feeling misunderstood or criticized. What impact can that have emotionally over time, do you think?
I think over time it can lead to a lot of issues around their mental health. You know, I've seen in my experience people suffering from anxiety, from depression, having really low self-esteem, low self-worth. They can be quite isolated. They can be quite fearful of actually, you know, socializing and interacting with other people because they're not sure how they're going to be perceived by other people or received by other people. There can be a sense of failure. Am I going to succeed at this? A fear of rejection, and that, you know, that can be in personal relationships, that can be in the workplace, that can be in friendship groups. And, you know, even things like burnout. I've seen people with ADHD and neurodivergence experience extreme burnout because they're afraid of asking. So they're masking, and what that eventually leads to is them completely burning out because they've not been able to regulate their emotions.
I absolutely agree there. I think I love that concept of instead of asking, but masking. I think that's really something that will stick with most people, because I think when what you're really highlighting there is something many people quietly experience but struggle to put into words. When someone spends years feeling misunderstood and masking those difficulties or trying to fit into environments that don't support the way their mind naturally works, it can deeply impact their mental and emotional well-being. And I think that whole concept of self-awareness, actually accepting as well that if their mind is working differently, to recognize what that might mean to them as individuals, is really important. Over time, that constant pressure to hold it together won't feel so overwhelming, and can lead, which we all know, those overwhelming thoughts can lead to intense anxiety and emotional exhaustion and burnout, as you mentioned, and that low worth and a fear of being judged or rejected. But actually understanding themselves enough to say, okay, I understand, I'm aware enough to know that my emotional understanding is quite different from someone who I'm living with or someone who might be experiencing and viewing life very differently from a different lens than what I am. And I think in those situations, when a person becomes aware of how they're regulating their emotions, they can then seek that self-help. So thank you so much so far, Vanessa, for your valuable insights. We're going to take a short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and today I'm joined by the wonderful Vanessa Malik discussing self-awareness, ADHD, neurodivergence, and emotional well-being, and understanding the mind with greater compassion and clarity. Welcome back, Vanessa.
Thank you.
Now, Vanessa, ADHD is often spoken about in terms of attention and focus, but emotionally, there can be much more happening underneath. What patterns do you tend to notice most often?
What I've noticed on an emotional level, people with ADHD can really become hyperfixated on things. And what I've found is that they cannot focus on anything else except that one thing that is consuming their attention at that moment in time. And this can, you know, it's not just about tasks, but also relationships. So if they're in a relationship and there's a difficulty in that relationship, or they need to have a conversation in that relationship, they become hyperfixated on that and they can't think about anything else until that particular task or issue is resolved the way that they feel it should be resolved. And so what you find is that because they're putting all their energy, all their investment into this one thing that is consuming them, the hyperfixation, it can have like a really huge emotional impact on them. You can find them becoming really overwhelmed. I've seen, you know, in my experience, I've seen people actually break down in tears, on the verge of tears, looking really flustered, you know, having anxiety, feeling actually, you know, I've also had people say that they feel like they're going to have a panic attack. People have had panic attacks, and this can be really confusing for other people around them, because it might not seem like such a big issue to us. It might be something that we can say, right, we can talk about this later, or can you just let me do this and then we'll come back to this issue. But for that person, they need it addressed there and then. And I think that can then lead to conflict, because if you don't understand the way that person is thinking and why they're hyperfixated on a particular issue, it can lead to further conflict. So it just escalates the initial problem. You know, saying that, the hyperfixation, it can also work in a positive way. So what you find that because they're so hyperfixated on a particular problem, they're actually really motivated to do that particular thing. And that can really develop their confidence. So I think it works both ways. You know, it can be swings and roundabouts almost, you could say, because one minute they can be really confident and say, right, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get through this task. And the next moment, they can feel completely defeated and deflated if things don't go the way that they anticipated or the way that they thought they would.
And I think that's such an important insight, Vanessa, because from the outside, people may only see the reaction, but they don't always understand the intensity of what's happening internally for individuals emotionally and neurologically. And also that emotional shift can be incredibly exhausting for the individual as well, because one moment they feel highly motivated, emotionally invested and optimistic, and then very quickly feel completely defeated, rejected or emotionally deflated if things don't unfold the way they expected, as you said. And as a clinical provider for ADHD, I often see how emotionally intense these experiences can feel internally, even if others around them may not fully recognize it. And you yourself, Vanessa, you've worked in education for many years. I know that you've experienced your students and people that you've worked with, both as a counselor and an educator, with people that have that neurodivergence and ADHD. So how can someone begin recognizing their behavior patterns without constantly judging or criticizing themselves?
Okay, I like to use a really simple tool, and I've used this for my clients, but I've also used it with other people, you know, friends and family that have just asked for help and saying, you know, I want to understand myself better. How can I do this? So it's called the Johari window, and it's a really useful tool for helping improve self-awareness. So it consists of, just for those people that aren't familiar with it, it consists of four quadrants. The first quadrant is an open area in which you write down what you and others know about you. So it's a really straightforward one. So what you can do is you can say, right, what do I know about myself? Pass it over to a friend or a family member and say, right, I want you to just write some, and you have a list of words that you can choose from. Write down what you would use to describe me. The second quadrant is described as the blind spot. So this is things that others can see about you, but that you are unaware of. Now, this could be certain habits, or it could be the tone of your voice that, you know, they're picking up certain things, but you're not necessarily picking up. And again, that might be something that, again, when you're giving people a list of words, you say, right, can you write down things that you notice about me? And you can say, okay, I didn't know that about myself. That was interesting. I didn't realize I spoke in a particular way, or I didn't realize I had a certain habit. So that's really good, because it helps you understand how others perceive you. So it's not just about how you're perceiving yourself, but how others perceive you. The third quadrant is the hidden area. So these are things that you know about yourself and that you choose to hide from others. And this could be for a number of reasons. It could be that there are insecurities that you have, you know, public speaking or a fear of large spaces, or a phobia, anything really, an insecurity about a relationship, about a friendship, or it could be things about your past experience that you just don't want other people to know. And finally, the fourth quadrant, this is an interesting one because it's the unknown area. So these are things that you don't know about yourself and others don't know about you. And you might say, well, what's the purpose of having that quadrant if it's things that you don't know and other people don't know? But I find that this is actually a really useful quadrant because it allows for self-growth and it allows for personal growth. So in terms of self-awareness, it can really help you develop yourself, because it's tapping into things that you don't know, but you have the potential to achieve. And I think that's really, really important, because as you know, and I know, growth doesn't stop when you reach a certain age or a certain milestone. You know, we always say we are continually growing as individuals, where our personal growth doesn't stop. So I think this is a really good area, because you can say to people, you can still learn new things. You can try things in a different way. Just because you've always done it this way doesn't mean you have to continue doing it this way. So that's the tool that I like to use. And I think it's a really useful one, especially if you just start focusing on the conversations about each quadrant.
Thank you, Vanessa. And I think what's so important about the Johari window is that it encourages people to gently explore themselves from different perspectives rather than staying stuck in one fixed identity or way of thinking. So often we only see ourselves through our own lens, and this tool opens conversation around how we see ourselves, how others experience us, what we may be hiding, and being honest and truthful when you're doing the Johari window, anything that is reflective, is really important to trust yourself and not feel that you have to hide anything, because this is personal to you. So I think even the untapped potential we haven't yet discovered within ourselves is good to face. And I really love what you said about growth continuing throughout life, because self-awareness isn't about becoming perfect. It's about remaining open. It's about remaining curious and reflective and willing to evolve as we move through different experiences and relationships and stages of our life. So thank you so much, Vanessa. We're going to take another short commercial break with a word from our sponsors. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia and we're continuing this important conversation with the incredible Vanessa Malik, exploring neurodivergence, emotional resilience and the power of self-awareness. Welcome back, Vanessa.
Thank you.
Now, Vanessa, parents, teachers, and workplaces can sometimes misunderstand behaviors. We know this all too well in the professions that we've worked in. So when these behaviors are linked to neurodivergence in particular, what do you think society still needs to become more aware of themselves?
I feel that there is a greater understanding around neurodivergence and ADHD in particular, in schools and in workplaces. But I think what we now need to do is develop those conversations further in society. You know, I have found in my experience that what happens is that on a person, I mean, I live with someone who's got ADHD and we do have conversations. You know, I have conversations with this young individual about his behaviours and how they impact him and how we are impacted by them. We have very open and honest conversations. But on the other hand, I have also got friends and family who are living with people with neurodivergence who don't have these conversations. And they've described how family members have described the person that they're living with as being lazy or not being bothered. So, you know, they have those, again, goes back to those labels. Those labels are still attached to them. And I think there needs to be something more happening at ground level where young people understand neurodivergence and how it impacts themselves and others, and just making those conversations open and honest. It's not about labeling people. It's not about us saying they're different, because I think that's another thing. We describe them as being different or not normal, or the normal is, you know, I think we need to get rid of all these labels where we say the normal is or the norm is, so that automatically people with neurodivergence feel, what, I don't feel that box, I don't feel that criteria. So I think those conversations, in my opinion, need to be held at ground level, in homes, in youth clubs. I just feel we need to have more open and honest conversations about neurodivergence and ADHD and how it impacts an individual, you know, in workplaces, in educational settings, in the home, in any setting, really.
Absolutely, Vanessa, and I completely agree. I think the more open, honest and informed conversations we have around ADHD and neurodivergence in workplaces, as you said, educational settings, communities, and like yourself, even within our own home, the more understanding and compassion we begin to create. And because often when people understand the why behind certain behaviours or emotional responses, it actually reduces judgment and allows individuals to feel more supported and accepted and emotionally safe rather than misunderstood or labeled. So thank you for sharing that. And in your experience, what strengths do neurodivergent individuals often possess that are overlooked or undervalued? I know earlier you spoke about hypervigilance, but what else would you include in that?
In addition to their hyperfocus, which I know I mentioned earlier, and that is a strength because it allows them to master really complex topics and develop new skills, I think the other one that really stands out is their creative thinking and their passion and enthusiasm when they're really interested in something. You find that because they have these abilities, these skills, it can really create change and meaningful change. So I think that is definitely a strength of people with neurodivergence.
As educators, we both know we always were taught and trained that we should build upon person's strength. And I think it's so important that conversations around ADHD and neurodivergence also focus on those strengths rather than only challenges, which is where a lot of people have that misunderstanding, I suppose. And as you said, hyper vigilance, hyper-focus, hyper-fixation can be an incredible ability when channeled into something meaningful, because it can allow individuals to learn deeply and master complex topics. And I know that you live with someone who has ADHD, as you mentioned, and I think it's important to remind that person or anyone who may be experienced living with someone with neurodivergence or ADHD that they can develop those skills. They're valuable skills. And alongside that, many neurodivergent individuals can bring enormous creativity, as we again have experienced in our careers, that passion, that innovation and enthusiasm into things that they truly care about. And often when they feel supported and understood rather than, I want to say the word criticized, but it's not really a criticism, but I think it's an element of restriction they may feel within them. Those qualities can lead to meaningful ideas like the problem solving and real positive change within the workplace or relationships and education and society and as a whole, I think. And when someone begins understanding themselves more deeply, what practical things can young people or adults start doing to become more emotionally aware and grounded within themselves? What can they immediately do? I mean, what would you advise the person that you live with that has ADHD?
Okay. I mean, the things that I'm going to share is actually things that I do with, firstly, the person that I'm living with, but also my clients and, you know, the young people that I work with in the educational world. Yeah. Some really practical and very simple things to do is to actually start naming their feelings. And what's really good for this is using something like a mood wheel or an emotions wheel and putting that in front of them and saying, okay, just look at this and say, you know, if you find that sometimes they're struggling to name the emotions, they can look at that and they can say, right, and start saying to them, okay, what are you actually feeling right now? So they're actually having to name, right, I've, you know, because what you often find is that they have a feeling. So it might be, oh, I've got butterflies in my stomach or my chest feels tight. And they don't necessarily know what emotional feeling to attach to that. So giving them something like an emotional wheel really helps them identify the emotion that they're feeling at that moment in time. So what you'll find on an emotional wheel is there's lots of different emotions. So it might be things like happy, anger, sad, you know, just the very basic emotions, but then it might also go into more detail. So what you can do is there's different ones available there and you can adapt the one, you can choose the one that you feel is most suitable. I tend just to use a very simple one with the common emotions like anger, fear, happy, sad, anxious. And what you can do is, once they've identified the emotion that they're feeling, is get them to then say, right, how is it making me feel physically? Because though we started with the physical, it's now attaching, I've got butterflies in my stomach. That's because I'm excited. So this feeling that I had in my stomach wasn't, I'm feeling sick and I'm worried. It's actually because I'm really excited. Okay, why am I, and then starting to go on to, okay, why am I feeling like this? Oh, I'm feeling like this because I'm going to a new setting. I'm not quite sure what it's going to be like, but I'm really excited. You know, that might also be, actually, I've got butterflies in my stomach because I'm feeling really nervous, and they might have picked out the emotion of being nervous. And then what you can then start to think about is, okay, you're feeling like this. Do you like the way you're feeling right now? And what you often find is saying, no, I don't like the way I'm feeling like, you know, I don't like feeling like this. So, okay, what can we do to help you regulate yourself? So what can you do to regulate yourself? So grounding techniques are really, really great for this. There's lots of different grounding techniques out there, you know, breathing exercises, but really simple ones like, okay, let's breathe and slowly count to 10. Might be one. They can start to use their inner voice. Now, it's an interesting one because often that inner voice can be quite critical. But if we can get them to retrain their inner voice and self-talk, so for example, instead of saying, oh, I'm going to fail when I go to this new setting, everyone's going to hate me, is to say, okay, I'm feeling really anxious about this, but I'm sure once I get there, I'm going to be fine. Or I'm finding this really challenging at the moment. I'm struggling with this. But what I could do is I could actually break it down into smaller steps, or perhaps I could try a different approach. Another really great tool is to use something like journaling, because this is an instant, they can grab it when and as and when they need it. So what they can do is, instead of talking to someone, because there's not always someone available to talk to, they can just get a journal out and write down, okay, what am I feeling right now? What triggered me? What were my triggers? What happened just before I started feeling like this? What could I do differently next time that might help me? Or is there something that might help me right now or help me approach this in a different way next time? And what this helps do is build their emotional insight without self-criticism, because it's not saying you've done anything wrong or you've reacted in the wrong way. It's just saying, right, this is how I felt. This is why I felt like this. And this is what I can do so that I don't feel anxious. It helps build their emotional regulation without self-criticism. I think that's the most important thing.
Thank you, Vanessa. And I think what's really valuable about the tools you're sharing is that they're practical and they're accessible and emotionally empowering rather than overwhelming. I really love what you said about journaling and self-talk, because emotional growth is not about criticizing ourselves for how we feel. It's about developing curiosity. And finally, Vanessa, what message would you want young people and adults who are listening and living with ADHD or neurodivergence to take away from today's conversation?
I think the key message that I want people, young people and adults living with neurodivergence take away is that your strengths, or your superpower as I like to call it, come from your different ways of thinking and feeling and processing information. And once you're able to better understand your own emotions, your own thoughts, your own values, your strengths and your weaknesses, by developing your self-awareness, you'll be able to make more informed choices and build better relationships, not only with others, but with yourself.
Absolutely. Vanessa, thank you so much for joining me today and for sharing such valuable insights, your warmth and understanding around a topic that affects so many people quietly and deeply. Is such an important topic to talk about. I think this conversation will help many listeners feel more understood, more compassionate towards themselves, and more aware of the more aware that neurodivergence is not something to fight against, but something to better understand and work with. And if our listeners wanted to connect with you, where can they find you, Vanessa?
You'll be able to find me on LinkedIn. Please do connect and reach out if I can help in any way.
Thank you so much. And thank you to everyone listening to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. If today's episode resonated with you, please do share it with someone who may benefit from hearing this conversation. To close today's episode, I've chosen a part of Vienna by Billy Joel, a reflective and beautifully grounding song that reminds us not to rush through life, not to constantly fight ourselves, and to understand that growth, self-awareness, and healing take time. Until next time, take care of yourself and each other.
Slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a juvenile. But then if you're so smart, tell me why are you still so afraid? Where's the fire? What's the hurry about? You better cool it off before you burn it out. You got so much to do and only so many hours in a day. Hey, but you know that when the truth is told, that you can get what you want or you can just get old. You're gonna kick off before you even get halfway through. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits for you? Slow down, you're doing fine. You can't be everything you wanna be before your time. Although it's so romantic on the borderline tonight, tonight. Too bad, but it's the life you lead. You're so ahead of yourself that you forgot what you need. Though you could see when you're wrong, you know you can't always see when you're right, you're right. You got your passion, you got your pride, but don't you know that only fools are satisfied? Dream on, but don't imagine they'll all come true. Ooh, when will you realize Vienna waits?